and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing late on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, where he attended the Knicks game against the Charlotte Hornets earlier today, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
Did you enjoy that Knicks-Hornets affair today? It was like the 11th most interesting game in the NBA.
I came home and watched a whole bunch more interesting games than that. LaMelo Ball had 32, 7, and 6 and was minus 32. That sums up how the game went today.
Not quite, not slightly better, slightly more negative than James Harden, which we'll get to in a minute. Joining us from Dallas, Texas. Now, this is a packed podcast, and so we won't get to hit on it, but you should, for some fun, read Band McMahon's story that he published a couple of days ago on the origination of the too small gesture in the NBA and the proliferation, which I don't think he used the word proliferation in the story.
I'm sure he didn't. It was a good story, though.
But check out that story. Sorry, Band McMahon.
No problem.
Be able to hit on it.
No problem. Howdy, partners. We definitely will hit on the originator of Too Small. One, Russell Westbrook will be part of a conversation to come.
But first, have you seen what Tyrese Maxey did on Sunday in Philly when the 76ers won their 8th consecutive game over the Pacers? The Pacers played well in this game, by the way, and continue to be one of the stories of the early season as they put up great offensive numbers, but not as good of offensive numbers as Tyrese Maxey, who had the finest offensive game of his young career, 20 of 32 shooting.
You just undersold it. He had the finest offensive performance by Philadelphia 76ers guard since Allen Iverson.
Well, actually, hold on. Let me give you the stats here, and then there's a good trivia question. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's a good one.
I think we both saw it, but maybe not.
All right. He's 20 of 32, 7 of 11 from threes, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 50 points, 5-0, plus 17. By the way, since we're looking at plus minus, but by the way, Embiid with a nice little tidy 37 and 13 with 7 assists in this one. And he took a back seat to Tyrese Maxey, who was absolutely brilliant, finishing
pretty good,
extending a tremendous start to the season. There have been 4 previous players in the history of the 76ers franchise to have 50 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in a game. 3 of them are in the Hall of Fame. The 4th one you will not get. I will, unless you already heard it, I will give you his initials, and you won't get it.
Okay, so
cut out for a second. What was the question?
You cut out.
50 points, five rebounds, at least 50 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. He is the 5th 76er to ever do it. Of the previous 4, 3 of them are in their Hall of Fame, and 1 you will never get. Not even sure this guy would get it.
I guarantee you this guy would get it. If he's some forgettable name who had a 55-5, trust me.
I liked him when I was a kid. I liked him. I played with him on NBA Live like 97.
Okay. Wilt Chamberlain, Charles Barkley, Allen Iverson?
Wilt Chamberlain, Allen Iverson, and Hal Greer. Barkley? I had the 5 assists.
Hal Greer, pretty good player.
This is the last one. I mean, if you've heard out
the
there.
Guy, so he was like a 80s or 90s?
90s, 2000s. I'll give you his initials. DB.
Dana Barros.
Yeah, obviously.
I was going to say Dana Barros. I was going to say Dana Barros, but you didn't give me the chance to. I wasn't going to say DB. I'm giving
time
you a hard time.
Time out.
DB,
Bontemps just said he was going to say that name.
I wasn't going to. I was giving you a hard time.
No, but once you went DB, we remember the 50-point game.
Dana Barros is easy to remember initials-wise. He was a good player.
Dodo Bird.
All right. Anyway, Tyrese Maxey. By the way, how about this one? Since 1973-74, when block shots were first tracked, Tyrese Maxey joins 2 players age 23 or younger with a stat line of at least 50 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 blocks. 2 players. One of them is active. One of them is a Hall of Famer and unfortunately no longer with us.
LeBron James and Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant is one. LeBron James, you're close. I guess LeBron didn't have three blocks.
Durant?
It's a good guess. AD.
Durant or AD.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dana Barros. Just kidding.
Dana Barros didn't have three blocks in his whole career.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it's hard to get the three blocks one is the hard one. All right. Anyway, just an absolutely brilliant performance, Bontemps. Tyrese Haliburton had 25 and 17 in this game, 17 assists. He is leading the league in assists. He's having a fantastic start to the season. The Pacers are having a fantastic start to the season. They played really well. By the way, these teams play again on Tuesday in an in-season tournament game in Indy. And I would advise you, if you have the ability to watch that game, watch it, because I'll bet
game is also in Philly on Tuesday.
Oh, it is in Philly?
Yes. I may be at the game on Tuesday. That's why.
All right. Well, anyway.
The Pacers aren't too far off from being 1-30. And by the way, best offense of all time, which would be the second time in, five or six years that a Rick Carlisle offense was number one in the history of the game. They are 27th defensively. And so,
yeah, I was going to say, it is not exactly shocking that Tyrese would go off in this game, A, because Tyrese has been awesome, and B, this is what the Pacers do. Every game is 140 to 130 because they're super fun to watch. They got all these guys who bomb threes, and they very much are comfortable letting the other team score as much as humanly possible.
They are flammable on both ends of the floor.
Maxey's playing terrifically. A bit bittersweet because crazy event on Saturday. Kelly Oubre, who was also having a tremendous start to this season, got hit by a car in Philly, broke ribs, and has other injuries. And I think, Bontemps, I think you watched the post-game interview. I didn't see it, but, I mean, Maxey is a minute off of scoring his 50th point and is dedicating the game to Kelly Oubre. A very, you know, stunning setback. I mean, obviously anybody gets hit by a car, it's very serious. So it's fortunate that he wasn't more injured, but you know, 76ers get this very unfortunate setback to a guy who's been really helping them come out the next night and thrash another team. Hopefully Oubre will be back, you know, in due course. They have no idea when, but you know, he'll be back this season, but they just changed their starting lineup. Put Nick Batum in there. And Batum plays great, and they promote Robert Covington, who didn't play as well in this game. But they have so much depth that, you know, regardless of whether it's a freak injury like a sprained ankle or it's this tragedy like Oubre, they have some resilience because their roster is deep now. So definitely a flexing of the muscles of the Sixers again with Maxey, Bontemps.
Well, to put a bow on the Oubre thing. First off, the Sixers said today he had a fractured rib and he's going to get reevaluated in a week, which I think considering what the circumstances certainly could have been in a situation like that, it certainly seems like, you know, it could have been a lot worse. I think it's safe to say. And hopefully he's certainly back soon because, as you said, he's been playing the best basketball of his career by a pretty significant amount. Has really been helping them a ton at both ends. But yeah, like, for as good as Tyrese has been, and he's been awesome, I think you sort of get a window into the kind of person he is and why everybody there loves him so much. Mm-hmm. When the second he walks off to do the interview after scoring 50 points for the first time in his career, the first thing he says is, I love Kelly Oubre. I've barely gotten a chance to know him yet, but I love him already. He's my guy. I'm thinking of him. Then he immediately got a bucket of water dumped on his head by Patrick Beverly and got cut off. But then he came back, talked about Oubre again, and then left. Like, didn't even talk about the game that he just had. And the game he just had was the latest reinforcement of the fact that through total fluke circumstances, because it's certainly not what the Sixers planned for, they are infinitely better off than if James Harden had opted out and they had re-signed him in the summer. Yeah. And having put the ball in Tyrese Maxey's hands, we've talked about it really since the beginning of the preseason. If he does not get hurt There's zero question he's going to be an all-star at this point. He's unquestionably one of the 12 best players in the East. He's one of the best guards in the East. He's going to be an all-star. And the only question now is, if he continues this for the rest of the season, is there any chance, despite how heavy the competition is at these guard spots, can he crack the top six spots for all NBA? And as Bobby Marks had to do some research on before the season, become the first guy to be eligible for the Rose Rule and get the 30% max without having signed an extension in the first place. Because all the other guys who would sign that had never been in the position he'd been in before.
Luka was the only one who was eligible before signing the extension.
But he signed.
Yeah, but the rest of the guys signed it and then had to, you know, make all NBA that year to get their money.
That's right.
You know, and not only are they so much better off than if Harden would have been signed long term, but so much better off than if Harden would have gone to Houston, as was widely anticipated for a while, and they wouldn't have gotten anything for him, because now they've got some rotation players. They do have those picks. But the greater point, the point to focus on right now, when Maxey just dropped 50, is they have found a bona fide co-star to go with Joel Embiid. And it's funny, after all the process, after Ben Simmons' number one overall pick, Markelle Fultz, the trade for Harden, the co-star to go with Embiid is this dude who's a 21st overall pick and just kind of, you know, just got better and better and better, and is breaking out just as it seemed like things were about to get really, really dicey in Philadelphia. And it's not hard to figure out just how overjoyed Embiid is about this development. I mean, you see his tweet where he's, you know, doing some handshake with
He tweeted a picture from him giving Max, him and Maxey having a handshake at the end of the game. So the franchise in all caps. And after the game, as he was talking about Maxey and giving credit to his trainer, Drew Hanlon, who we got Maxey to work with this summer, he ended his little spiel about Maxey by saying, "That's why I said he's the franchise," with a very big grin on his face. But this is also why this is such an important thing for the Sixers, because, like I've been saying for a while now, this guy's the perfect co-star for Joel, not only because of the way they fit on the court, but because of how they fit off the court. And Joel really likes him. The two of them get along great. He is sort of big in the areas off the court where Joel is not. They really synchronize really well that way. And it's just remarkable the situation that Philly is now in. Like, we spent months in like, oh, what are the Sixers going to do? What's going to happen to Embiid? There were all these, you know, people were drafting lists of where's Embiid going to go. And now he's sitting here with this vibrant young star guard who, you know, by the way, I was thinking about this watching the game today. Rest of the season, this season alone, who would you rather have, Tyrese Maxey or Damian Lillard?
Maxey, he's young, he's more durable, and he's a hell of a defender.
I don't know if I'd quite go with the last part, but I would rather have Maxey the rest of the year. And the fact that that's even a debate, the point that you can even think about the question just shows the situation the Sixers are in compared to where we thought they were going to be 6 or 8 weeks ago when they were staring at this abyss and didn't know where things were going to go.
Right. I think the thing for me is that there was a lot of expectation that with extra opportunity that Maxey would blossom, but he has blown away even the optimistic viewpoint that of what his role was going to be. And I suspect that the Sixers, who were big believers in him, basically made it known that they wouldn't trade him for Dame. Even they are probably pretty surprised at how fantastic this has gone. This first
everybody's surprised. The guy has like 65 or 70 assists and 10 turnovers. He's shooting 40-something% from three for the third straight year. He never turns the ball over. He's diamond guys up. He's hitting step back threes left and right. He's dropping 50 points in games. Like, this is way beyond even the most rosy.
He's averaging 29-7 at 50-40-90 with a ridiculous.
Yes. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing. And he literally has 10 turnovers in 10 games or nine games.
There was two remarkable plays in this game. One where he gets a chase down block on Buddy Hield. Not so much a chase down, but he blocks Buddy Hield from behind, like comes in like he's 6'9".
Yeah.
Ejects Buddy Hield from behind. And then another play when the game was still very much in doubt, where he hits this hellacious step back three and Bruce, like right in front of Bruce Brown, and Bruce Brown like rolls his eyes like, you got to be kidding me.
You know, the other favorite play of this game, and this was, you know, just to get him 50. But what happened? You mentioned Embiid had seven assists. The seventh assist for Embiid was he got the ball. He's up near half court. He basically looks at Maxey like, come get this ball and go get 50.
Yeah.
Hands it to him. Maxey comes and just knocks down this ridiculous three. And Embiid's out there near half court with his hands on his head like, oh, my God, can you believe this bleep?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Embiid said after the game, he goes, you know, I've scored some 50-point games in my career, but it's hard to do it when you – because usually I get 20 free throws to do it. He's like, he didn't need 20 free throws.
Obviously, yesterday was a pretty rough day for the Sixers, Saturday, with what happened with Kelly Oubre. But that aside, it has been remarkable, having been around this team a lot since the start of training camp, just what the vibes are around the group and how happy and together this team is across the board, especially with everything that they've had to go through, beginning with the Harden stuff, now with the stuff with Kelly. And Maxey is at the center of that for basically every part of it. His ascension into being a full-blown star and beyond is probably the biggest development in the whole league through the first 3 weeks of the season. When you think about the potential ramifications it's got down the road, like it's just a massive, massive thing to see happen in real time.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. All right, on the flip side, the Clippers lost to the Grizzlies. Grizzlies' first win of the month, I think.
I don't know. Second of the year, I was going to say they lost to the Grizzlies, and that ain't easy to do these days, fellas.
At home, the Grizzlies still spitting fire from their loss the other day to the Blazers, or the Jazz.
Their second loss of the season to the Jazz. They also have lost to the Blazers and the Wizards.
Which Taylor Jenkins came out and, you know, blamed the officiating. Got a $25,000 fine.
It was effing atrocious.
I mean, I'll just say that regardless of the individual calls, typically when you are complaining about the officiating at that level, it's because you need the whistle so bad.
I also think that Taylor Jenkins is going to go out of his way to make the players feel like, hey, I'm fighting with you. I've got your back for obvious reasons. It's been a rough.
It was a strategic decision by him to do that. Just like the other day after Giannis gets the controversial ejection, Adrian Griffin says before the game, you know, I've got to, I need to stand up for Giannis a little bit more. And then he gets ejected like an hour and a half later.
Speaking of, just a quick aside, then let's hammer on the Clippers. But the Giannis ejection thing reminded me of this. Ant had a spectacular dunk and got teed up for a quick little mean mug, much like Giannis the other night. I want to propose a new rule, just a new 3-second rule. If you dunk on somebody, if you have a spectacular dunk, really any dunk, I don't care. We don't need to judge you. If you dunk, you have 3 seconds to where if you don't make physical contact with somebody, you can say or make any kind of look. You can hang on the rim for 3 seconds. We don't need referees to worry about dudes enjoying their dunks. So refs, swallow your whistle.
Get the fun police out.
Yeah.
Fun police out. Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
Now. There,
by the way, when Giannis got ejected.
I'm dealing with the Clippers right now, by the way.
But by the way, when Giannis got ejected, it was the too small.
Too small. He did, but that the whistle was blowing as he used to. He got ejected for a mean mug. It wasn't the
That's
too
right.
But and I know this for sure because I saw that he got ejected. I saw the thing. I saw a video. I was at a Mavs game, and I said, "Oh, bleep! This too small story is running tomorrow. I'm gonna have to adjust some things." And so I hit my editor. He's like, "He got ejected for the mean mug. The too small came afterwards." So. Whatever it is, though, 3 seconds, dudes can enjoy their dunks. They can hang on the rim. They can do pull-ups. They can do backflips. You know, as long as their pants stay on and they don't punch anybody, whatever the hell they want for 3 seconds.
That's what they used to say about McMahon on Friday nights in high school. So, anyway, at this game, the Grizzlies came in scuffling. They're on the road. It's an early start in L.A., and the Clippers get absolutely blitzed in the first three quarters. In the fourth quarter, they make a comeback to make it close. They actually, I think, briefly took the lead. But the Grizzlies essentially controlled this game until the very end, and then they held them off. And the big thing is, once again, the Harden lineups were horrible.
I got 5 stats for you.
Oh, boy.
On the Clippers. Real quick, starting lineup did not score the first 2 minutes and 44 seconds of the game. They did not score the first 2 minutes and 47 seconds of the third quarter. They didn't make a field. They made 1 field goal. The final 5.5 minutes of the first half, basically the starters didn't make 1 the final 3.5 minutes of the first half. Their starting lineup together through 4 games has played 46 minutes. It's being outscored by 19 points per 100 possessions, has an offensive rating of 87.5, which in today's NBA is like horrendous.
I think that went up, by the way, because I think it was 85. I think they've been so bad that today it actually slightly went up.
And Russell Westbrook and James Harden together in 4 games now, they've played 73 combined minutes. Offensive rating of 101.3. Defensive rating of 123.5, net rating of -22.2. There's the story right there.
Harden was minus 28 in 29 minutes.
Yeah, and I saw these guys in Dallas on Friday when they got smoked. And listen, to the Mavs' credit, the Mavs are smoking some teams now, but the Clippers got.
By the way, the Mavs won again tonight. Kyrie and Luka combined to go 24 of 48.
They smoked the Pelicans.
Kyrie is just now starting to get cooking. And the Mavericks are just a tick below the Pacers for the best offense in the NBA. But Friday night, the Mavericks smoked the Clippers so bad that when I say the Clippers stars were well-rested, they didn't play a second in the fourth quarter. They didn't play a second in the fourth quarter. And I actually asked Ty Lue about it after the game because I'm like, listen, I understand the score, but obviously these guys need time on the floor together. You know, was there any consideration to just getting them some reps out there? And said, yeah, there was, but we got a 12:30 game on Sunday. We haven't been so great in those. So I decided rest over, some reps.
By the way, James Harden barely got many seconds in the fourth quarter in this game.
Yeah. Harden in that game had 14 points in the first quarter. They came out looking good. Harden in the rest of that game had 0 points. And that was a game Russ was the one who had the awful Russ was minus 26 in that game. He had by far the worst plus minus among their, we'll call it core four, whatever you want to call it. They're four future Hall of Famers. It was Harden this time. But, you know, Ty Lue said today he's got to stagger them as much as possible. He said the other night that he has to play or that he wants to play Harden with a big, and there's only one on the roster really, with Zubac as much as possible to give him that pick and roll partner.
Well, they have Mason Plumlee, but he just hurt his knee, so.
Right. And one available one, I meant. And look, like, it didn't work out with them their second time around in Houston. It was 1 year, then they both wanted to get the hell out. They at least put up a lot of points that year. You know, they at least had some success. But if you'll remember, they had success because they went to this revolutionary small ball PJ Tucker at center, trade Clint Capella in a deal that brought back Covington and just opened the floor up. And they did that because you can't play Russ with a non-shooting big a whole lot. And at the time, Harden was still probably the best one-on-one player in the world. Harden's no longer, I don't even know, I don't think Harden is any longer a great one-on-one player. I'm not sure he's a very good one. He's a great pick and roll player. He's a great passer, but he's not a guy you just can go one-on-one and cook anymore. My point is Harden and Russ are not compatible. They're not compatible. And so they're going to have to get to a decision if they want to actually win a game every once in a blue moon. One of those dudes has to come off the bench. And I'm just telling you, if it's Russ, I think it's going to be pretty messy.
Well, here's Russ, the thing. The three-man unit, we've talked about this, of Westbrook, mm-hmm. Leonard, and Paul George, yep. was successful in the five games they played before the trade. Mm-hmm. And in this game, they made a fourth-quarter comeback, although Kawhi didn't score in that run.
But he wasn't in for a lot of it. He came back later on.
But the three of them together were effective. So they flew back from Dallas Friday night. They had a film session or a light practice on Saturday. And at that practice, Ty Lue said, he announced in front of the team, James, we want you to be yourself. He basically doesn't think James is being assertive enough. He said this publicly. This is not inside information. He said this publicly. And this is the game that follows, where Harden has arguably his worst game yet.
Well, it's weird watching them play because, like McMahon, you just said it, right? James Harden is not the isolation guy anymore. The reason he was effective last year with the Sixers was because they ran this pick and roll with him and Joel Embiid 1,000 times a game. It was an awesome play, and they had a ton of success with it. Mm-hmm. I'm watching this game today, and it's the first time I've really had a chance to sit and watch the Clippers play since this trade. I've caught snippets of it, but I had games the other nights. They basically ran Harden in no pick and rolls for large stretches of the game. They're having him like operate at the high post and running like Paul George and Kawhi off these flex cuts to the 3-point line and stuff. Like they were doing all this stuff. Their offense was incredibly slow and stationary. Nobody was moving. It was a lot of standing around. And if you're going to trade for James Harden, put him in pick and roll and let him run pick and rolls and hit Kawhi Leonard for spot up threes and hit Paul George for spot up threes and deuce and have PJ Tucker out there to spot up for three, mm-hmm. and like run some stuff that's going to work for him. Instead, they had him in these positions where it's never going to work for him because he's not exactly going to light it up defensively at the other end. And then when he has the ball, you've got Russell Westbrook spotting up for threes. Isn't going to work. Like he hit one or two today and missed a bunch. You just watch what they're doing and it doesn't, and like, obviously Ty Lue knows a lot more about X's and O's than me. I'm not trying to pretend he doesn't see this, but like you watch it and you go, this just doesn't make a lot of sense for the personnel they have, this fit. And I understand there's chemistry reasons why you want to try to make this work. A week ago, we sat here going into the first game and said, this is not going to work. We now have a week's worth of data. This thing has gone as badly as it possibly could have gone. And
Well, like, that's the thing.
I don't know how long they're going to stick with it, but they have to do something.
As far as I can tell, there's almost no signs. There's almost no light at the end of the tunnel. It's, you know, they seem to believe as an organization that it will work.
Yeah.
That this is just a period where they have to figure it out. But I'm not seeing any like, oh, well, wait a minute. This is something to build on.
There's not a lot of bright spots. You know, Ty Lue in Dallas the other night said, hey, you better take advantage of it now. And honestly, like, Harden was really like upbeat, was as chatty as maybe I've ever seen him. Same with Kawhi. Like, Kawhi sat down. It was just a couple of us, me and Andrew Gray from the LA Times. But Kawhi sat down and talked for like 6 or 7 minutes, just explaining the patience. And hey, we understood, you know, it's been a little bit more of the downside than we anticipated, but we understood there's going to be stuff to work out. Paul George used the word super optimistic. You know, he said in that game, he came in thinking I'm going to be a glue guy and basically said, screw that. Like, I've got to be in attack mode. I can't come in trying to be.
He was in attack mode in the fourth quarter of this game. Yeah. That's only why the only reason they got back into it.
You know, one thing that
Powell were awesome.
One thing that was interesting in our chat with Harden, I said, I was asking, like, do you guys have to settle into? And I said, I pecking order might not be the right phrase, but he goes, I get what you're saying. And he says, we don't know what that looks like yet because it's too early. And then we all bring different dynamics to the game. I think for me, as far as the pecking order, I'm a facilitator and a scorer. So if somebody has it going, then I have no problem generating really good shots and making sure we get quality shots, blah, blah, blah. Basically, what he's saying is, yeah, we do need to figure out a pecking order. And in James Harden's mind is, give me the ball and I'll figure out when guys need to be getting it. I don't think that's the way Russ is thinking about it. And I wish I could give you more insight into what Russ was thinking. He was the one guy of those four who wasn't very chatty, to the point he gave us pretty short and clipped answers for a couple of for about a minute and a half. And then I said something along the lines of, I asked him what his concern level was after the first few games, obviously weren't anything near what they wanted. And he challenged me on who said it wasn't what we wanted. I said, I guess I'm saying it. He goes, I don't agree with that. And I said, you want to lose by double figures? And that was the end of our discussion. He walked off.
I think, to be a little bit charitable to Russ, I think he thought you were asking him if he didn't want the trade to happen. And then instead of being Russ, he derailed it.
No, he wanted to argue. He was contrarian Russ, which tends to happen when he's grumpy Russ.
Well, certainly that there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Well, they play again on Monday.
A back to back, just what they need.
Actually, I'm sorry. It's Tuesday. In the tournament, they play the Nuggets. It's not the team that you want to see.
Oh, by the way, Nuggets, who've only beaten them, it feels like 1,000 times in a row. Definitely who they want to see.
By the way, the Nuggets lost on Sunday to the Rockets.
No, to the red hot Houston Rockets.
That's right. That's
a cool name, baby.
That's right.
The sizzling 1-6 straight Houston Rockets. The smothering defense of the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, they held the Nuggets to 104 points, which is...
Bro, they've held three of the six... In this six-game winning streak, three times they've held opponents under 100, and then there's been a 101 and a 104 as well.
By the way, Jokic had 36, 21, and 11 in this game, and they lost.
Yes, McMahon's vaunted bench did not really come through. Combined 4 for 19 in about looks like 60 minutes total played here.
Didn't like the bench tonight. They did not follow my suggestion of small ball center Aaron Gordon with the second unit. Went with Zeke Nagy. He was minus 18 in 11 minutes. But no, hey, the Rockets, man. You know what? And that's actually, I wanted to mention this. There are three teams right now that are very happy about the way things have played out with this whole James Harden saga, right? The Rockets are happy that they didn't give him the max contract that honestly, we all thought they would at one point.
Yep.
because Fred VanVleet has come in there and you know is leading that team that is
at 26 today.
Yeah,
been exactly what they needed.
He had a
big shot in their comeback on Friday. Who they beat on Friday? He basically hit the
New Orleans. He had a bunch of big shots down the stretch of that game.
Huge shots down the stretch.
Look, him. You know, so they went and got Fred VanVleet instead.
Talked about Philly.
Very happy with that. We talked about Philly. Oklahoma City's happy because, man, things are, you know, betting on a future L.A. Clippers lottery pick right now is not a bad swing to be taken.
I will say this about the Rockets.
One team is just preaching patience. The team that has James Harden.
I will say this about the Rockets. They're 6-3. 7 of those 9 games have been at home. But they won them. They're 6-1. Like, you know, like it's one thing to say you've had a favorable schedule. So that's meaningful. Also, before we go on and talk about another team that's struggling, I want a hat tip the Miami Heat, who won their 5th straight game on Sunday against the Spurs. I know it, you know, beating the Spurs isn't much right now. Victor.
Second night of a back-to-back, though. And missing and a bunch Adebayo, of guys.
Bam Adebayo is having the best start to a season of his career. And he had another great game in this one, 24, 11, and 6, 10 of 20 from the field. And as you know, yeah, you mentioned, so Hero was out, going to be out for several weeks with ankle injuries. It is somewhat interesting that they started winning when Tyler got hurt, but actually, dang. I think it's more about Bam Adebayo than anything. But Jimmy Butler did come back and play in this game and missed the last one. But anyway, hats off.
One thing really quick on the Heat. Jaime Jaquez, first round pick out of UCLA, had best game of his career yet with Jimmy Butler out, beating Atlanta on Saturday night, played 32 minutes off the bench Sunday. Obviously, Eric Spoelstra, pretty early on, they do have some injuries. Trusted him a lot early on. He's already got a pretty big role. Already looks like a Miami Heat player. Pretty interesting young piece for them. Guy who came up a lot this summer in the talks for about potential Damian Lillard trades a lot. But he's been a really nice bright spot for the Heat so far.
I wanted to make
and
one.
Victor, by the way, he's shooting too many threes, and he's missing them a lot. He came into the game, I think, shooting 31% on threes, and he was 2 of 9. And I did not watch this game, but I'm not sure that 9 threes. He was 8 of 22 overall, and I'm not sure that 9 threes is what he needs right now. So just as we're tracking, Victor, he still had 18 and 11.
Goes back to what we've been talking about the whole time.
I didn't want to make one quick point about
7 turnovers for Victor tonight. I'm sorry. Go ahead, McMahon.
McMahon get in his point. Yeah. He's been waiting patiently.
Sorry.
Another Euro who's a part-time Texas resident, Alperen Şengün. Look,
he's only a part. Oh, because he goes back home. I was like, wait a second. What do you mean?
He can't guard Joker, but neither can anybody else in the league. But hey, here's my point. Brook Lopez did the Houston Rockets a huge favor by ditching them at the altar in free agency. They thought it was signed, sealed, and delivered. They moved money, moved contracts to make room for him. And then he said, second thought, uh-uh. Guess what? Huge favor to the Houston Rockets because Şengün is a stud who needs to be starting, needs to be playing 30-plus minutes per game. And, you know, we've talked about him before. This dude, yeah, Joker put up huge numbers on him, but Joker couldn't guard him either. And I don't think there's very many bigs in the league who can.
Real sliding doors moment a few years ago when with the 16th pick in the draft, the Oklahoma City Thunder had a pick that they got from the Celtics in the Al Horford, Kemba Walker trade.
Yeah.
And they took Şengün and traded him for 2 protected picks to Houston.
Yeah,
and those it's an interesting thing. They ended up getting shipped out later to the Knicks. The Knicks now have them. They're Washington trip protected picks. They ended up getting traded to get Usman Jang to Oklahoma City. But it's interesting sliding doors moment to think about. Alperen Şengün playing next to Chet Holmgren right now with Shea and those guys look pretty good. And instead,
by the way, Jeff Green,
he's looking pretty good in Houston with these guys.
Speaking of the Nuggets bench that was poor today, Jeff Green, his first game against his old team. I think it's their first game against him.
Mm-hmm.
He had 15 points, 5 of 7 shooting with 4 rebounds off the bench today.
believe and 13 of those were in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
Is that right?
Closed the game. Yeah, closed the game. Closed the game over Jabari Smith down the stretch, and was a big part of them blowing them out in the fourth quarter, winning the game.
Yeah. And by the way, when we talk about like leadership, you know, like the vet guidance in the locker room, he's a big part of that too. Obviously, you've got Van Vliet and Dylan Brooks who are in the starting lineup playing heavy minutes, but Jeff Green has been a big part of just the value of having vets in the locker room for them, I think, has been pretty big.
No question.
All right. So Phoenix Suns dropped to 4-6 on Sunday, losing to the Oklahoma City Thunder at home. Boy, it's unfortunate Oklahoma City is 0-2 in the in-season tournament. I thought they were a team that could have made a run in that thing. They are not out of it yet, but being 0-2 with a home loss already, they're in big trouble about advancing. But
I just hope I get to see an in-season tournament court live with my own eyes at some point. Didn't happen to me.
Mavericks have all kinds of tournament court problems.
Yeah, and the first court that the Mavericks were on was in Denver, where the three-point line was wrong. It was too far away. And then their court had to be flopped out. McMahon, you reported on it. What was the reason for that? For their in-season tournament court back in Dallas wasn't used?
Some kind of screwed-up paint job. And I'm not sure if it was just cosmetics or there was a safety issue as well, but basically they decided we can't put this court out there.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Well, anyway, the Suns got beat in this game. Jalen Williams, who's from Metro Phoenix, J-Dub, the wing, had 31 points. And what it was interesting here is that the Thunder crushed in the fourth quarter of this game.
So I got some stats on that, too. Suns fourth quarter stats.
Oh, all right.
And this has been a big problem for the Suns so far. Go ahead.
That is correct. In 10 games, the Suns have been outscored in the fourth quarter by 61 points, by far the most in the NBA. Miami is next, minus 35 in the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter of games across 10 games, per possession, on a per 100 possession basis, Suns offensive rating, 89. That is DFL, to use a scientific term. Defensive rating, 114.3. Net rating, negative 25.4 in the fourth quarter.
That, no way to play,
my friends. It's not good.
It's no way to play. I believe they're also either 29th or 30th. I don't have updated numbers from today in turnovers in the fourth quarter.
I can check. Their turnover percentage in the fourth quarter is dead last also. 19.6% of their possessions end in turnovers.
19%.
You get the actual number.
Well, by the way, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had another awesome game in this one, 35.
He remains awesome.
Chet put a big old, I'm not going to say put Nurkic over his knee because I think Chet's legs would snap. But he got the best of old Nurk.
They outscored him 31-13 in this fourth quarter. 31-13 on the road.
I mean, we obviously
they have 48 turnovers in 10 games, by the way, for the Suns. Yeah, in the fourth quarter.
The Suns
seems like a lot
are mediocre at best. That's pretty apparent. We'll see when he's back. They bumped him up to doubtful for this one, a sign that he's progressing, you know, a sign that hopefully he's back pretty soon here. Man,
Robert Bradley Beal tweaked his back in this game and played through it.
Yeah.
It's a reminder of the trickiness of that going forward.
Yeah. Not great.
So I, you know, it's obviously you can't assess it without Booker, but I will say that these fourth quarter problems, and if you've watched them play some of these fourth quarters, it seems like they could benefit from a point guard. And again, Booker's only played two games, and Booker would be that guy. So, but I'm just saying, like, they have possessions that go haywire, and it looks like, I'm not even talking about Chris Paul. I'm talking about campaign might help them a little bit if he was around right now.
You know, it's interesting. I was out in Phoenix during the preseason. I was talking to Booker about, you know, like, what are the concerns with you being the full-time point guard, or you guys not having a quote unquote, you know, true point guard in the lineup. And he said, really, it's just about those last few minutes, you know, when, you know, execution is like, a lot of times the game slows down. It becomes a very, you know, possession by possession execution type of game. He said, it's that is, you know, if not the concern, just like, we really got to focus on that part of the game. That understanding, that's where the point guard play really comes in. And the season opener, was it against the Lakers, I believe, comes down to the, you know, comes down to the last few possessions, and Booker was just surgical, dime, 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 you know, and they win the game. Now, the only other game that he played this year was the second loss to the Spurs. And if you recall, that's when Wimby matched the Suns point for point in the last 4 minutes of the game, and got some help from his teammates. The Phoenix offense did go kaput. Now, having said that, at some point, I don't know exactly when in that game, but some point Booker did strain his calf in the game, finished it, but I can't tell you when exactly he did it or whether that affected him down the stretch.
Well, they're an incomplete at this point, but that
we have to, you have to stop saying that. They have a team full of star players that get hurt all the time. This is part of the grade.
Yeah.
They can't keep saying they're 10 games. They have not played 54.
I understand, but like acting like, well, we have to wait till they get everybody there. This, you had to bake this in from the beginning.
Right. That's still true. What we can evaluate is how those three guys fit together. Unless
totally.
We go off of some preseason time when it looked really damn good. Now, when will we be able to? Who knows? Hopefully soon, but there's no guarantee of that, especially with Beal tweaking his back again tonight. You hope that that's not something that lingers, but unfortunately, back injuries tend to linger. And you hope Booker comes back and doesn't have any further problems with the calf, but calves can be tricky as well.
Frank Vogel got asked after the game if Booker could be back Wednesday, and I believe his answer was, we'll see. Their next game is Wednesday against Minnesota, so we'll see.
Speaking of Minnesota,
he's able to get back by then.
Boy.
All right, speaking of Minnesota, they go 7-2 with a victory over the Warriors. The Warriors 6-5. They've lost three in a row. I think they lost three in a row. Lost to Denver, lost to Cleveland, and lost to Minnesota. And Edwards, we mentioned this dunk he had earlier. You should find it. I believe if you're on social at all and you have any NBA, you follow any NBA stuff, you'll see it.
I'll be stunned if you listen to this pod and you haven't seen it by now.
He goes right down the baseline, and like, here's what I love about this dunk. He goes right down the baseline and he dunks on Dario Saric, and he sort of midway through the air turns, you know, I don't know how many degrees. He does a 45 degree turn, I guess it would be. And after he does the dunk, or maybe it's a 90 degree turn, as he does the dunk, on his way down, he smiles. He was really enjoying it in the moment. And then he gets
teed up. Then he mean mugs. Then he gets teed up.
Right. But he was originally smiling, which I liked. He had 33 in this game. Carl Towns, who's warming up a little bit after shaky start, with another good 21 and 14.
Gobert, I think, 5 shots in this one.
Timberwolves continue to have the league's best defense by 2.7 points better than the Knicks, 102 points per 100 possessions.
The Warriors do not crack 40% shooting. They do not crack 30% on threes. And like, this is what's been happening to teams who play the Wolves. They have bad offensive games.
I tell you what, if I'm Devin Booker, not quite ready Wednesday. I don't want to come back against, I don't want to have Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards all on my grill and then have to deal with Gobert at the rim. I'm going to,
well, you I'm, know,
feels like, should... feels like 3 games after that, Jazz, Wool, Blazers seems like a little bit easier. Easy.
I mean, maybe, but you would, if you know Devin Booker, you know that's not the way he rolls.
Listen, man, I'm just saying,
if I'm the Suns, I'm giving him an extra couple days and having him get himself 110% and then playing those
well,
three
games.
Well,
that's fine. Instead of but throwing I don't him think out there. Booker...
I listen, we all know how Devin Booker is. We know he's going to want to play, but I don't know if throwing him out there in his first game against Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels is a good idea.
Jaden McDaniels, by the way, was 6 of 8 shooting in this game, in addition to playing excellent defense.
You know what's crazy is Ant was at 33 points, was a plus 15, and I thought it was, by his standards, just a all right game. He didn't shoot it well. I thought some of his shot selection was rough. But he's just a stud and they're really good, man. Conley had 9 assists. Let me see, 1 turnover. That's like a regular old night for him. You talk
I think
about
that's just like third turnover of the season.
I think he had a couple the other night. He wrecked that stat a little bit.
I think
bit.
He's up to like 4 turnovers this year.
Yeah. I think it's like 5, but yeah.
Yeah, he has five, 5 or 6 in 9 games, 6 and 9 games now.
I jinxed him when I said he had 30-1, and then he actually had some turnovers.
And you mentioned that Cat is starting to, like, listen, we all know Cat can score. He's starting to get comfortable. He's starting to get in a groove, and they do need that.
Totally.
But
their offense is down near 20th in the league.
They definitely need Cat to be that number 2 offensive option. It's Ant's team. And it's a team that has a chance to really be a pain in the ass because they're the best defensive team in the league. But to have any hope of being a real threat, they need Cat to be a big time scorer as a second option.
Well, speaking of the Warriors, real quick, Steph had 38 in this game. He is having, even by his standards, a prolific start to this season. One of the best starts statistically he's had in his career. But the Warriors have just been average. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson is 5 of 16 in this game. He's now shooting 34% for the season. He has yet to crack 20 points in a game.
That's,
and Andrew Wiggins scored just 8 points in this game.
Counting.
Oh, he had 6. Mm-hmm. Well, he's average. That's good because that's what his average is for the season.
He's averaging 11.
I was going to say that.
Sorry, I was looking at Looney. I take it all back.
Yes.
I take it all
He's
back.
He's averaging 10 and a half. But whatever, dude. Like, Wiggins, and he said it himself to our buddy Marcus Thompson, The Athletic. He's never had a slump like this. He's never.
Yeah.
But the problem is not just that he's in a slump offensively and the scoring's way down. Shots aren't falling and all that kind of stuff. But like, dude, he's like kind of loafing through games like he did with the Wolves again. 4 rebounds, you know, come on, man. Like,
well, he's, you know, what's interesting to me. Yeah. His rebounding is way down. His 3-point attempts are way down. He's not even getting 3-point attempts. He's shooting them miserably. He's shooting 16% on them, but he's not even getting them.
There's no aggression in his game anywhere right now.
Well, there was
Steve
a moment
Kerr made up passing reference early on about how he just, I mean, he didn't say he wasn't in shape, but I think that's pretty much what he was saying when he came.
He and Clay struggled throughout the preseason. It was a concern coming into the regular season. It has been a concern that has carried over to the regular season to this point. There was a moment in Saturday's loss to Cleveland when he missed a wide open 3, Andrew Wiggins. Then I think the next possession or maybe the one after that, he got a big alley or a offensive rebound tip back dunk, came down the lane. Nobody guarded him, threw down a dunk and like landed on the ground and like just ducked his head because he was frustrated about missing the three a few minutes before. And like, the bottom line is, if Golden State is going to be a championship level team, those guys just have to be way better. We talked all last year about how that starting five of Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Looney was the best lineup in the league. Outscored teams by 20-something points per 100 last year. That group through seven games this year is getting outscored by 14 points per 100 possessions. Offensive rating of 126, or defensive rating of 126.
Ooh.
Like, that's just not obviously anywhere near good enough. And like, a lot of that is Steph or Clay and Wiggins have just not been to the level that they need them to be. And if that doesn't change, they're just not going to be that good.
No.
So, and remember last year, Clay got off to a terrible start. There was all this talk about, is Clay done? He ended up finishing the year with 300 threes, played way better after that, got going. I would expect he'll get going eventually. I'd expect Wiggins will get going eventually. There's enough of a track record of that now.
Right.
But until that changes, like, the Warriors are just not on the level of these other teams. And like, Minnesota just came in. I mean, yeah, it was the second night of a back-to-back. Minnesota was rested. That's all fine. But they controlled the game from start to finish in San Francisco. Like, that's not supposed to happen to the Warriors, and it did.
By the way, on Saturday night, Draymond Green got ejected. It was his 17th career ejection.
This was a weird one.
So on this play, he'd already had a tech earlier in the game, which shouldn't be forgotten. I'll just say that.
But I texted someone in the first quarter and said he's going to get thrown out of the game because he was running around, stomping around.
You texted me.
I texted you. I texted a couple people. I thought I texted you. He was running around yelling at people, and Ben Taylor was doing the game, and Ben Taylor loves to give technical fouls. And I was like, this guy is definitely going to get ejected.
By the way, what a window into the USWB that is. I texted a bunch of people he's going to get thrown out, and then I told you so.
Well, by the way, I was at a hockey game. I was enjoying my Saturday night.
It wasn't an I told you so thing. It was just watching the game. Draymond was in a particularly ornery mood, even by his standards.
There's a transition situation, and he forearm shivers Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell goes into the baseline.
It was a
no call.
It was a forearm shiver. It was a little love.
I would say he pushed him, and I would say Donovan sold a little bit to try to get a foul.
He made contact. There was no foul called.
That's right.
Donovan runs down the floor moments later and just body checks.
Yes.
Body checks Draymond. Draymond's like, where'd that come from, bro? Of course he knows where it came from, because he had just kind of done the same thing. But they review the play, and as soon as Donovan does it, he immediately points to the other end of the court.
Yeah.
And is like telling the referees to review that. So the referees go review the play on Donovan to see if that was a flagrant, which frankly, had they called it a flagrant, wouldn't have been out of line.
He should have gotten some kind of penalty, but a common foul. It was insane.
If what Draymond did was a technical foul, then Donovan did the same thing.
I know, but forget about that. That's not what to me is interesting. What's interesting is when the referees reviewed it, they were able to review 40 seconds earlier, 30, whatever, 20 seconds earlier.
What's the statute of limitations?
Well, this is what I'm talking about. So like, when you see soccer played, referees sometimes will not call something and they'll let the game go.
They'll give advantage.
And it's called. And then they'll come back and make the call. Also, sometimes there'll be an action, and then the team will go down and score like 20 seconds later, and they'll review something that happened 70 yards back down the field. In soccer, there's this thing that you can sort of let things happen and then go back and adjudicate.
So, like, the NBA is suddenly a European freaking
football. That's my point. My point is, we have an in-season tournament, and now this is what happens with flop warnings. I just saw it again today. I can't remember what game I was watching. And a referee can see a guy flop. He will not call the technical foul in that moment. Then they will go down the court, and like the next dead ball, then the referee will be like, hey, remember that possession a minute ago? you're getting a technical foul for that flop, sir. And that's, I've seen that happen a few times.
Flop and it's 5-on-4 the other way. You flop, they're going to go score and it's going to be your fault. Then you get teed. I'm fine with that.
That's the concept of what they do in soccer. But what is I'm telling you? Draymond, I'm telling you, Draymond was penalized a technical foul for something that had happened on replay earlier that wasn't reviewed. So this is now apparently a thing that can happen. And you can have the flop running. The referees are taking a sort of a soccer. This is like a soccerization of NBA officiating is what my point is.
Oh, great. Games are going to be 1-0 all the time now.
just wait till we have stoppage time. That'll be wild.
Don't we ain't doing all that. Next time somebody takes a cheap shot, they should say, hey, go back and look. 2 quarters ago, this guy elbowed me while we were boxing out. You need to review that. Like,
well, that's what all the Warriors fans were screaming because
what is there the statute of limitations? I'm asking.
Steve Kerr
said, you know, can I go back to 3 years ago? Like he made that joke.
Draymond deserved to get ejected from the game, but like you can't be getting this guy. No, you can't be letting him get thrown out. I'm just saying his actions throughout the game. I didn't have any sympathy for Draymond Green getting ejected. Is my point. He earned his ejection, whether it was that play or a different one. My point is that Donovan Mitchell running up to the guy and doing this.
Yes.
And like, oh, it's just a common foul. Like he made no attempt on the ball. He ran across the court. He started yelling in his face. Like what are we doing here?
And hold on. You can't taunt after not even taunt. You can't mean mug after a dunk, but you can taunt after you get a guy ejected.
Right. Right.
I tattled on you. Peace out, bro. Like,
yeah, he did. Just, after Draymond got ejected, Donovan was like, gave him the peace sign.
Yeah, he's like deuces. Yeah, I have no sympathy for Draymond at all there, but it was odd that Donovan got to get him thrown out of the game essentially for a foul. It was very odd.
Well, anyway, the Warriors are battling a little bit right now. They're not playing their best. They need Klay and Wiggins to play better. And speaking of battling, the Lakers are battling the Blazers, and we're going to go watch that. So thank you to Jackson, our producer. What's that?
Is it all right?
Oh, okay.
I'm excited.
Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We'll be talking to you in a couple of days.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.